priceless.
You just got yourself banned.
Ooh, spooky.
I believe, every day's a good day when you paint. I believe, it'll bring a lot of good thoughts to your heart. I believe, every day's a good day when you paint. I believe, it'll bring a lot of good thoughts to your heart. Let's build a happy little cloud. Let's build some happy little trees. There are no limits here. Start out by believing here. You can almost paint with anything. All you have to do is practice. There are no limits here. You start out by believing here. This is your world. You're the creator. Find freedom on this canvas. Believe that you can do it. Because you can do it.
Hi, and welcome to the Joe Customs Podcast, Episode 2. I'm John, a.k.a. P-Love, admin owner of JoeCustoms.com. I'm here with one of our co-hosts. Our other co-host is having some mic problems. You might know him from Joe Customs, of course, but also he's General Joe's Sideshow 12-inch guest reviewer, Mysterious Stranger, a.k.a. Chris.
Hello, everybody.
Our guest today is Keenan, a.k.a. JFAC, a.k.a. John. He was August featured customizer. You may know him from his giant 1/18 scale Transformer customs that he's been pumping out of late. You may also know him from his Shrunken Treasures storefront and from his End of Days Dio story. Keenan, you want to say hi?
Sure. Hey, hey, hey.
So how are you guys doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Good. Taking some time off of some football. Other than that, we're good. So Keenan, tell us about these the Optimus Prime and I'm guessing Megatron customs you've got going on.
Megatron and Optimus, yes. Big fan of the 25th Prime that they came out with. It was early 2000s. Just, you know, one of the best figures ever. And was always bothered by the fact that they made it more or less 1/24th scale. I wanted one that was closer to 1/18th that I could, you know, have integrated with my Joes. So after doing my his tanks, I just decided I had so much styrene left over that I was going to give it a go and see if I could do a prime in that scale. And very happy with the results. Jumped right on doing Megatron. And I'm also going to be doing Bumblebee and Shockwave, which is my all-time favorite Transformer.
Oh, that'll be cool. Why didn't you make the Optimus transformable?
I've owned that the Masterpiece version of him for, you know, better part of 10 years now. I got it when it was brand new, the Japanese release, and I have never transformed him. I have never put him into truck mode. He stands in robot mode. You know, he's one of the few figures I have all his accessories together with him, and, you know, for that length of time, to never have done that. Plus the fact that if he was able to transform, you wouldn't be able to put a figure into him. So to me, it was just, you know, there was really no point. You know, if you could transform him and sit some G.I. Joes in him, then maybe it's something I'd consider, but it just isn't something that's feasible, so for the extra time, I don't think it would be worth the effort for me.
Yeah, I agree. I've got that Masterpiece figure. I've got the U.S. release, and when I first got it, I transformed it back and forth a couple times from truck to robot mode just to get a feel for how it transformed, and then he's been in robot mode ever since.
Yeah, I haven't transformed. He's been in robot mode the whole time. I think maybe once I did it, and every once in a while, like, mess with it, but pretty much on display as the robot. So I get that. Now, is he more articulated than when you did your Devastator Constructicons?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he's got articulated shoulders. He's got swivel bicep. He's got a hinged elbow joint. His hands are off of Unicron, so they're completely articulated. Then he's got a waist joint. He's got hip joint. He's got a swivel thigh, and he's got an articulated knee. And a double articulated ankle and a toe joint. So, yeah, you can pretty much do whatever you want with them.
That's awesome. How far have you gotten on the Megatron?
I got half of the upper body, like from the chest up, done. And then I got his cannon done. And last night, actually, I had already had it sprayed black. And I got some gunmetal gray from Tamiya. And I did a real light coating of that over it. And it looks really sweet because it's still black. But it has a little bit of metallic look to it now. Now I ran out of styrene again, so I placed an order and hopefully I'll have that because I got off next weekend. So I'll probably try and get a bunch of him done by then. And then I got Bumblebee's head, so off of the bobblehead figures.
I have a question. How are you going about planning and getting the scale right for these? Is it just, are you just winging it, or do you lay out like blueprints, or are you taking plans from online or somewhere, measurements?
No, I'm doing measurements myself. Like with Prime, it depends what scale, what height you're going to. My Optimus would be about 35 feet tall if it was, you know, an actual scale to 1/18. Prime is probably more like 20 feet, and the movie version was anywhere, depending on who you talk to, from 28 to 32. Now, a 20-foot tall 1/18 Prime would only be 18 inches tall. So I said to go through all that work to get just 6 inches, you know, didn't seem, again, like it was worth the work. So I upped him to 2 feet tall, which puts him more like anywhere from like 1/12 to 1/15 scale. You know, that said, the cab is the exact same size now as the Brooder cab that are supposedly 1/18. Well, and then Megatron, I'm just going off of the dimensions I did with Prime.
I think Brooder actually is 1/15.
1/5. Yeah, those you can comfortably fit 1/18 scale figures in.
Right.
Yeah, so that's, again, that's why I originally tried doing a Prime like 4 years ago, which I never got finished because I was never happy with it. But yeah, you can fit G.I. Joe's in his cab, you know, no problem.
Moving on to your 12-inch custom. That hiss was amazing. The 12-inch hiss. I'm like, oh, he's scratch building a hiss. No, he's scratch building a 12-inch hiss. That was crazy. And then you did two, right?
I did the one that was weathered, and then the one I did just like factory fresh. Yeah, my biggest problem with those now is, you know, what do you do with them? Yeah, you know, they're huge. So I got one sitting up on my wife's like a little storage cabinet she has, and the other one sitting in the garage. And you know, I just hope that it sits out there and the stickers don't start bubbling or peeling or anything, but they're huge.
You can always box up one and send it to me. I've got a couple Cobra Troopers that would love to sit in that thing on my shelf.
Sure, hey, you ever want to take a ride out, you know, up here, you're willing to take one of them.
Now, did you do the same scaling and planning for that you did with the Prime? Or did you
just start with
a 25th or a vintage hiss?
Right, I took the Crimson Sabotage hit, only because it was the first one I found, and I just multiplied everything by 3. So you're just sitting there, you know, doing math to see, you know, what do I need as far as styrene? You know, is this something even feasible that once you get started on that you're going to be able to finish it? You know, it's a ton of work. Luckily or unluckily, at the same time, I was coming off of Toprol, the blood pressure medication that I was on, and it really messes with your heart. Like, gives you, like, you're having a heart attack. You know, there were nights I went to bed where, honestly, I didn't know if I was waking up the next morning. I mean, your heart is going that crazy. But they tell you these are side effects of coming off of that drug. The best thing you can do is find something to occupy your mind so you don't think about it. So for me, building a 1/6 hiss, and it did. It got me, you know, got me through it.
If I'm feeling any bit tired or loopy or on one specific occasion drunk, I can't go near my customizing tool. I am a danger to myself.
Yeah. Well, if it wasn't really drunk, it was more like your heart is beating at just a crazy rate, and you're constantly getting those feelings, like if you get heartburn, where it's like kind of shooting through your shoulder, you're feeling you're having a heart attack, and then they tell you just, you gotta keep your mind off of it, because your body's weaning off a drug that was designed to slow your heart rate down. So now that it's not getting it, it's craving it, and it's doing just the opposite of what it's supposed to have helped you with. So, you know, again, you know, sitting there taking measurements, cutting styrene, gluing pieces, you don't think about that.
Did you ever entertain the idea of doing working treads?
No, not at all. Because the thing weighs, you know, I weighed it twice. One, the first time I weighed it on a regular house scale, what it did was you can't see the weight. So I put the camera in there in with the hiss tank and took a picture of it. And it said 15 pounds. Then I have a UPS scale at work for sending out UPS packages. And I put it on that. The thing weighed 18 pounds. Now, the problem with working treads and something like that, I don't think they stay on well. And secondly, I don't know who's going to really push this thing around to see them work. That, you know, again, if, you know, instead I took the other route and cut. It was like 120, I think, 3/4 by 3 inch pieces of plexiglass, and then beveled all the edges that were going to be facing out. And that's, you know, I glued them in place, and that's what I went with.
Well, it turned out fantastic. I was really jealous of that when I saw you starting on it. I'm like, wow, this is going to be amazing. And then the finished product just left me drooling. So I'm like, that would, the amount of time and energy and work that went into that, you know, that's something that I myself would start and then, you know, get about 2 hours into it, and this is too much work, and give up. And the fact that you not only did it and it turned out so well, but that you did it so fast. It's just amazing. And I'm really impressed with it.
It's also a big thanks to J-Man who, you know, did the stickers for me. You know, I was having a hard time finding somebody that was willing to work with me on it. I talked to him and he said like, yeah, you know, we'll do this, and just did a fantastic job with them.
Yeah.
He, you know, big thanks to him.
J-Man's a great guy. He helped with, for the conventions and stuff. He helped with our site t-shirts and also the business cards and stuff that were actually business stickers for the logos and stuff. So he does good work. But I do think you missed out on making those moving treads because you would have had a pair of his roller skates if you would have went with them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's something you can always go back and revisit. But for me, there was, you know, it's more of a dial prop. It's not something I'm going to sit there and actually, you know, push around and play with like you might with the little hit. You know, it's just, like I said, it's huge and it's heavy. I even doing an RC on it, which would have been a cool idea. The thing is so front heavy that it always has a tendency that it wants to tip. I mean, it doesn't, but if you push it enough, it's going to tip forward.
Since you're both customized at a 12-inch scale, how do you find that? Like, you mentioned how, like, the vehicles are just different and there's weight issues you got to take into account. From a figure and vehicle perspective, have you guys found one is way more difficult than the other, or what are some other factors that people who haven't customized in the 12-inch range really should know about beforehand?
Chris?
For me, it's the expense is the biggest factor. You can get, you know, with the Pursuit of Cobra and the 30th anniversary figures, they are just as detailed as the 1/6 scale figures as far as sculpting and, you know, little details like straps and buckles and things like that. When you work with the 12-inch scale, you know, you're working with, instead of, you know, just plastic, you know, plug-on pieces, like, you know, backpacks that just plug into a hole, you've got straps and buckles, and that, you know, increases the cost just across the board. I love being able to get in, and if I don't like the way a holster is sitting on a figure's hip, I can take it off and adjust it and change it out a lot easier than on like a 4-inch scale figure where you'd have to use either a completely different part or, you know, sand it down and re-sculpt. It's just the ease of customizing the 12-inch is a lot easier, I think. But the expense kind of outweighs that a little bit.
Kino, what about you? What has, like, prevented you from going as full-on in the 12-inch customs as you have the 3 3/4?
To work on 12-inch customs?
Yeah.
It's something I've collected them for years. I've only just started getting into doing customs. But, yeah, the expense, like, I'm doing a road pig custom right now. I found a guy, Ski Man, on one of the 1/6 sites that made a custom road pig's head, the hammer, and the shoulder pad. And that was, like $88 for that. Then my base figure that I used was $40. Then, I got him a pair of boots, which were two different figures. And I think that was maybe another $30. Then, his little crossbow I got was like another $25. Yeah, they're very expensive, but when it's done, to me, you know where that expense went. From an adult collector standpoint, you can't beat these things. You know, I think to do dio stories, to sit out and, you know, set up little dios or whatever, the 4-inch figures are fantastic and you can't touch them. But if you want a figure to put together, stand up on your nightstand or whatever, the 1/6 is absolutely the way to go. Now, even if it's just you found your favorite character, you know, and maybe that's good enough.
Yeah, I definitely agree. The expense, you could definitely see it. You know, I've got customs sitting on my shelf that easily, when you factor in all the parts and pieces and what it costs to put them together, you know, even if it was just not a straight out of the box figure like a Sideshow or a Hot Toys, I'm still looking at $120-$150 just for some of my customs.
Yeah, that's on the cheap side.
Yeah, exactly. But you can look at them and see exactly where that money went because the detailing's there.
Yeah, for me, it's getting into those, which I'm kind of glad I went back to customizing 118 stuff again, was just feeding the addiction of, you know, I picked up like the Sideshow Indiana Jones figure, which was a great figure, but his jacket I didn't like. So I went on eBay for $25 and found the Hot Toys jacket, which is better. Then I got him the idle stand from Raiders. That was like another, I think, $30, you know. So my initial purchase, I think that figure I got for like $90 shipped. Yeah, you're well over $100 already for it.
All right. So tell us about your end of days Dio story.
End of Days. It basically started out, I've been a huge zombie fan since the age of 10. Absolutely love them. And I've been a huge fan of G.I. Joe since I was 12. So I decided I'm going to somehow, you know, put these two together. I did my first Dio story in 2004, which was called Dead End, where they introduced the zombie virus, which of course Covert created. And that was it. It was like a standalone one-off. And I thought, well, you know, why don't I continue with that? Because I enjoyed it. I enjoyed writing it. Started after that, writing End of Days. And it took me, I don't know, several years to get 30 episodes written. And then, I guess about 2 years ago now, I posted the first episode. The only problem now is my computer crashed. And I wound up, all the information, all of those stories are on my old computer hard drive. So I got to get them off of it so I can continue writing it. Or continue shooting it. It's just the idea I wanted to do something different than anybody else was doing at the time. I wanted to, if I'm going to make customs of G.I. Joe characters, I was tired of just rehashing the same look, so I decided to armor them up and make them look unique so I could fit them into my story. And the hardest part was keeping track of the customs over the years, so that when I was ready to use them, I had them and knew where they were.
Yeah, that Venomous Maximus, it's still one of my favorite customs. I think you were the first person to really, like, use real flames in one of your action shots, and it's just an amazing piece.
Yeah, well, I have out in the back of the house, we have this area that's 11 by 11, and we decided to put, like, a small patio there. So what happened was I would get from work, like, rip bags of play sand, and I would just take them home, throw them in, and over the time, you know, we were going to level it out and put patio blocks. But the kids, my kids, kept going there playing it like it's a sandbox. So over the course of the years, we've actually got like 2,000 pounds of sand in there now. And they go out and they play in it, and it never became a patio. But anyway, that was always the safest area to, you know, put some substance and light it on fire because it's very controlled. And that's what I did with that.
Is it Springfield or is it another unspecified town? Your diorama.
Oh, no, it's whatever, you know.
I mean,
that was, it's not supposed, just like a city.
You didn't customize a building or a few buildings, you customized a city block.
Yeah.
How do you, when it's not in use, what do you do with it?
Actually, it's very easy. All the buildings themselves are up above the rafters in the garage, so you don't even see them. And that's actually where my, I have a USS flag, which it's a great vehicle. It's really cool, but it's one of those, if I could go back and not make that purchase, I would, because I don't use the thing at all. But anyway, the buildings are up there with the flag, and the streets, they're, pieces of plexiglass, and they're, let me think, 4-foot by 8-foot section. So I have them shoved between my fence and my neighbor's fence. So again, you don't see them. And if I decide, oh, I feel like doing a city, dio for, you know, a customer or whatever, I just pull them out, pull a building out, set it up, and shoot.
One of the many benefits of home ownership is having a place to store all that stuff.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't have an attic or a basement. So everything is in, I got a 2.5-car garage. So everything has to fit, like, in totes, up on shelves, because we use the garage for cars. So, you know, as far as storage, we, you know, everything has to be, like, in its place.
Something I wanted to ask you about that's kind of a personal question, really, for me. You've added some members from the Joe Customs boards into your dial story. Is that something you had planned out, or is it just one of those fun little things you did on the fly?
Well, when I saw, you know, Dave making heads of both Joe members, yourself, Tim Templer, I said that would be great to get those and add them in as characters, you know, whether they're in one episode or several episodes. Dr. Bindi's in it. Actually, Dan was supposed to send me, or maybe still will, send me one of his self-custom heads, and I would put it in. I just think it's a neat way to, you know, say thank you and to show appreciation to other members of the community.
Well, I got to say, I definitely got a kick out of it. I know when I sent you the head, it was just as, you know, here, have this, do something fun with it. I never expected to be put into the arena in your dial story and be such a badass, so thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Wait, you weren't the one that got killed in a very bad way?
I was still a badass.
Actually, his character's still alive. He's still going. Actually, you're going to show up in another episode.
Spoiler.
But you don't know when and where, so. That's a lot of things. Like I said, I got, you know, I think there's 10 episodes out there now. I got another 20 still to go. I guess if I didn't get sidetracked by Optimus and Megatron and the hit tanks, I probably would have put out a couple more already.
Well, I can say we're very glad you got sidetracked, because those are some awesome customs.
I appreciate it.
Is there anything else you'd like to plug, or besides Megatron, is there anything else you're working on that we should look forward to?
I'm actually, as soon as we hang up, I'm gonna go paint some Energon cubes I'm working on. And they're fun. I wound up putting them out of, 1/8 inch plexiglass, glued them together, and then, I took some red, like, spray paint for plastic chairs, actually. So it kinda, it's like Krylon Fusion. So I sprayed them, and they looked terrible. So I sat there then with, contractor solvent, trying to get the paint off it. So what wound up happening, it actually looks like you use the, like, the clear red paint and paint them so that they don't look too bad, but I gotta now finish those today. Other than that, not so much that I could think of. Just, like I said, get Megatron finished, and I ordered a 118 Volkswagen Beetle that I'm gonna chop up for Bumblebee. See how that worked out.
That was gonna be my question about the future Transformers you're doing. You're going with the Generation 1 designs?
Yeah, absolutely. I still wish they had done that with the movie or something a little bit closer to it. You know, I'm not a real fan of that alien look where they all look exactly the same. And I can't, when they're fighting, I can't tell you what's going on. I see, you know, I see a shoulder, I see a knee, I see an eye. I don't know who's, you know, I don't know what it belonged to. So there's something definitely that I missed about that G1 blocky look.
Yeah, that's something a woman I worked with had gone to see. This is going to be a little bit of a tangent, but it kind of relates. Went to see Rise of the Fallen with her kid, and she was asking him, you know, I can't tell who the good guys and bad guys are. And her kids were like, the good guys are the ones that have color. The other ones don't have any color on them. And that was pretty much, that was the most accurate statement I've ever heard about those movies.
Yeah,
you know, as far as the designs was, you know, the good guys have color on them, the bad guys don't. So I'm glad you're going with the Generation 1, because those are some, you know, the most classic, the most iconic, you know, looks for all the characters.
Yeah, I'm hoping one of these days to actually make it to a G.I. Joe convention and bring some of this stuff. I had actually an opportunity to go to the New Jersey G.I. Joe convention October 7th, but at the same time, my son's friend, who is 10, he really enjoys customizing, which I think is great. So he'll come over to the house. Can you show me how do you use the Dremel on the figures? Because he's a big zombie fan too. But he wants to make some torn skin or whatever, and I'll help him out. Now, in a couple towns over from me, the first Sunday of every month, they have a big toy show. What they want to do is have him sleep over Saturday night, and then that Sunday go to the toy show. And he's never been to a toy show, so I was kind of torn between do I go to the G.I. Joe show or go with him and my son to the toy show. So I'm pretty much choosing to do that because I think while they're still willing to do it, I want to take advantage of that.
That's fantastic. That's great. Anytime you can encourage the younger generation, it's a good thing.
Yeah, well, like my son, I'll keep telling him, pick up a paintbrush, man. Try, you know, don't be scared. Now I'll have you do it. Well, all right. but I just can't get him into it.
All right. Well, thanks for being on here with us. Thanks for telling us all about your work. Keep it up. Can't wait to see what you got coming.
I appreciate you guys having me, and I hope you guys both have a great day.
Yep. Thanks, John. It's good talking to you.
All right. Bye.
Bye. All right. We got Dan, a.k.a. the Spectre, on the line. He's taking a break from chopping up the galaxy and making an army of space pirates to come and talk with us. He had some mic trouble earlier, but he's back. We're going to have this new segment. It's just a miscellaneous segment, but this particular one is going to be the worst customizing injuries you've ever had. Dan, why don't you go ahead and take this one?
Well, the worst injury I ever had customizing was back in, I want to say it was 2006, when I was working on my Through the Gate Wise Adventure series, which is my Stargate Star Wars crossover. When I was making the headdress for the Cobra-headed God set, I was cutting up a Sigma 6 Cobra Commander staff to make the upper part of his headdress when the rather brittle plastic it was made out of shattered and the razor blade went through the plastic and caught my right middle finger right at the corner of the nail and lopped off the top quarter inch of my finger. Needless to say, it bled all over the place. It hurt like you wouldn't believe. And I couldn't find the tip. I don't know where it went. I think one of the dogs got it. So I ended up having to pour some crazy glue on the tip of my finger. Because as you know, crazy glue was invented during the Vietnam War to seal up flesh wounds. Sealed it over the top of the cut, wrapped it up in gauze. And it took about 3 weeks for the tip of the finger to grow back. And I still actually have a scar where the blade entered my finger and began to cut. And it took like a week after that for the nail to grow back over the tip of the finger. And I still have a little bit of a nerve deadness right at the site where the blade went in. So it's weird. I compress there, and I really don't feel much. But that's the worst customizing injury I ever had.
Chris, what about you?
I've been rather lucky. I've read the horror stories. You know, this topic comes up every once in a while on the boards, and I've read the stories of people slice open Dan's head, cutting off a finger or something. I've been very lucky that probably the worst I've ever had is just like a minor cut from an X-Acto blade, just like a, just enough to break the skin and started bleeding. I've never scarred myself, knock on wood. So I've been rather lucky. I haven't had any significant injuries, you know, beyond just the regular scrapes or occasionally catching a Dremel wheel on the tip of my finger or something, you know, but nothing bad.
Oh, yeah, that you are lucky.
I say that now, and I'm going to go work on something and, you know, like stab myself in the eye with a paintbrush here in a little bit, but that'll be a story for the next time.
I've got 3 Band-Aids on my fingers right now. Like, I don't even count X-Acto blade cuts. That's how bad it is. No, the worst injury, I was Dremeling a neck ball off an O-ring figure, and I was wearing safety glasses. That's what makes this bad. A chunk of plastic from the neck went up under the glasses and caught onto an eyelash, and, you know, it's bubbling hot plastic, started burning the eyelid, and I lost, you know, I was so worried about that. It was fine. It blistered a little bit, but it was fine. I couldn't find that neck ball for the rest of the day. I was looking for it, whatever. Couldn't find it. It had... I went to bed that night, and I'm like, what the hell? And I reach into my underwear, and I was clothed at the time. That should tell you something. Reached into my underwear and found the neck ball. Somehow it had gotten, you know, up my shorts or something. I don't know how, and got lodged in the underwear. It's a disgusting story. But the funny part...
Strangest thing you ever pulled out of your shorts.
I wish that were true.
Strangest thing you've ever found.
So, like, years go by, and we have our daughter, but I could never customize when she, you know, you have a newborn baby, they're always napping or on the verge of napping. So I would customize at the whole other end of the house in our master bedroom, in the bathroom, actually, because I could close the door and turn on the fan, and a Dremel, you couldn't hear it at all. So I'm Dremeling, and my wife comes in, and in this case, I was actually just in my underwear. I was going to go take a shower, but then saw the custom stuff, and was like, well, I'll just make a quick cut. And she comes out. And
like you do.
She comes in and she's like, what the hell? Why are you customizing in your underwear? And I looked at her and I was like, because I learned from the last time you don't ever customize naked. Not with a Dremel. And it's funny that you mentioned the crazy glue. She was chopping something in the kitchen and dropped a knife, went right into the top vein on her foot. Blood spurted everywhere. I come in and it looked like a serial killer had walked through the house because she tried to drag herself to the bathroom. And she's in the bathtub just soaking it, and the tub is just filled with this bloody water. And so I was like, no, you don't wash it. You elevate it and let's put a gauze on it and try to stop it from bleeding. We get it. And I'm like, you just put some crazy glue on it. You'll be fine. She doesn't listen to me. We end up going to the ER. We're there for like 2 hours total time, waiting and then finally seeing the doctor. He comes in, gives her 2 drops of medical super glue, and then charges us $200. So,
oh, that's a lot of money for that.
You know, insurance covered it, but we still had the copay. But I'm like, go ahead. You can tell me I'm right anytime now. You know, I went through the whole, you know, what was it, a MasterCard Visa thing, you know. Waiting in line 2 hours, 2 drops of glue, $200, having your wife say that you're right, priceless. All right, moving on. Besides Keenan's customs, were there any customs since the last time we recorded that really stuck out in your guys' mind, either from Joe Customs or anywhere else on the net right now?
Most impressive customs to me this week has to be the Voltron Pilots by Iron Will. The white is crisp. The stripes and lines on the uniforms are laser straight. I mean, it's just, they look better than the production figures that Mattel had put out for their Voltron Club. They're just phenomenal. And, you know, Iron Will always does some great stuff. I think he just finished up the G-Force guys that got them out, and those were fantastic, too. They look like a step right out of the cartoon.
Yeah, I have to agree. That was going to be my submission this week, was that Voltron set. They all came out really well. Like Dan said, the white, envious of how he did that. If he's not using white base figures, I don't know what he's doing. I want to know what his trick is, because that white is just factory finish. You know, the lines, the colors are crisp. The parts all go together really well. The belts that he's using are really amazing. I'm getting the Mattel set, and I am really envious of these figures. I kind of wish these figures came with the lions instead.
Yeah, I agree with you guys. There were some good customs, but having 2 teams back-to-back like that with his Gatchaman, Battle of the Planets customs, and then banging out, you know, the Go Lion Voltron team right afterwards, just impressive work. And if these were on shelves, I would snap them both up in a heartbeat. No question. All right, let's move on. Chris, we'll start with you this time. What's on your workbench?
I am still working on my Joe Customs group project, 50th group project stuff. It's been insanely hot here in LA. It's been upper 90s, low hundreds the last couple weeks, so I haven't been able to get outside and finish spray painting my vehicle, because when I get up to do it at, you know, 7-8 o'clock on Saturday morning, it's like 80 degrees already. So those are still a work in progress. I have a 12 inch figure that I'm just finishing up. I've got a few tweaks to finish up. I'll be posting him probably later today. That's about it for what I've got on my workbench right now.
Dan, what about you?
Well, I have the same things on my workbench as last week. Unfortunately, this week I did not have a lot of time to come. Customized. I've actually been pretty busy with some real world stuff going on. But I did start a new project. I picked up some clay the other day, some air hardening clay, because unfortunately my stock of air hardening clay had actually hardened up on me. I don't think I put the lid back on all the way. I'm taking a base from one of the, I believe it's pronounced Slyke Oracles, which is the fantasy figures you find at Toys R Us. I had used one previously to make my Oracle of Grayskull a couple months back. And I had a second one on hand that I wanted to do another diorama base with. But I didn't want to copy the same design I did on Grayskull, so I removed the vines on the one side and the stone on the other side. But unfortunately, beneath where the stone and vines attach, there's no detail whatsoever. It doesn't continue the cobblestones that the rest of the base has. So I'm going to actually attempt to sculpt cobblestones on and continue the design around and over the edge down to the bottom to give it a full cobblestone look across the entire base. So I'm going to attempt that at one night this week. So I'm doing another little diorama base. The playset thread on Joe Customs really got me hooked on building some scenery now. So I have a couple of mini dios or like battlefield accessory type things that are on the works right now.
Yeah, after that thread, I started looking at my plans for Dr. Mindbender lab that I've had for years and all the parts I've cobbled together. No progress, but I revisited it at least just because of that thread. I'm still working on my Hamburglar custom. That's what's got my attention right now. I kind of looked at it and needed to go at it again, thinking, you know, what if it wasn't just, you know, the Hamburglar that you see with the rosy cheeks and the freckles and the red hair? What if it was still red hair, still the redheaded stepchild of the McDonald's world? But what if he was more like Zorro and he's been incarcerated and all this stuff? So I started going with that theme instead. Still the same look, but now I got some characterization behind it, which helps. And then I was thinking about an action shot of him, like, in the progress of stealing, you know, a hamburger recipe. And I was like, you know what I need? I need, like, one of those big safes. Not a vault, but, like, a big, you know, master safe that, you know, a corporation would keep their prized recipes in. And got distracted with that and started building that out of styrene. And fodder box, I'll go first. Fodder box. I haven't gotten anything in specifically for customs. I did get the Krang from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and some of those Avatar Halo figure jars and put a Krang in there, and that may go into the Dr. Mindbender lab if at all, but other than that, I really haven't gotten anything. How about you guys?
The only thing I've gotten recently, I got a couple packages in trade. We got some really nice cargo crates that were sent to me by a guy named Doc Allens over at Imperial Shipyards, and they're fantastic. I haven't had a chance to really play with them and paint them up yet, but he does great casting work. The only other thing I've gotten recently was, I know you guys probably read about it on the site, but I've got a $2 Retaliation Hiss Tank at Walmart earlier in the week, which was an incredible find. And I took it apart. Initially, I really wasn't overly crazy about the vehicle that I wanted the figure it came with. I kind of fell in love with the vehicle. I turned it into actually two things. The upper part of the body is going to be a hopper tank, and the bottom is going to be part of the chassis for a Sand Pirate fast attack tank.
Yeah, I've got to say, that Retaliation Hiss, I think Justin summed it up best in his review. He said if that had come out before the Pursuit of Cobra Hiss, people would have been all over that, because it's in the progression from the V1 Hiss to, you know, the DTC. And then if you put that Retaliation Hiss next, I think the design carries through. I picked up one and painted it black, and I haven't posted it yet, but cause I'm still putting stickers on it. But that's one that it's got a lot of versatility if you give it some chance. The figure is a little bit crap, but you know, you take that head off that figure and put it on something else and it's pretty salvageable. As far as what I picked up this week, just a few miscellaneous parts for my 12-inch custom that I mentioned earlier. That's about it. There just hasn't been much out there, so I've been taking a break from that for right now.
Dan, you got to post a picture of those crates for us. Give us a little bit of a review because I'm really curious. They sound interesting. And I agree with Justin and you, Chris, that the hisses, if they had been flipped in release order, yeah, I think they would have went over well. The Pursuit of Cobra is just a better vehicle, I think.
I don't own a Pursuit of Cobra Hiss. I've never actually laid hands on one, but I think the angular design of it gives it a much more futuristic look. So like you said, it does seem like it should come after the Retaliation version as far as development-wise. So, but like I said, I've never actually laid hands on one, so I've never gotten to fuss around with it. But it definitely is a very cool vehicle, and I can see where people would see the Retaliation version as a step backwards. But it's a cool little vehicle. It cost me $2. I can't complain too much.
That's a great price regardless.
Yeah, I hit $2, I'd have grabbed all of them they had.
And the funny thing is I actually picked it up and put it down twice because I wasn't really out to buy toys. I was actually out buying cat litter. And I just happened to see it. I'm like, ah, you know, I've heard the vehicle's not that great because I had heard, you know, people's complaints about the step back in design. But I wanted the figure strictly for a background bounty hunter type guy. You know, I'll dress up more Star Wars-like. And here, I'll buy it for $2. And when I got home and took the box apart, I'm looking at it, I'm like, oh, this actually has some really good potential to be turned into a sci-fi vehicle, or in this case, two sci-fi vehicles. So I'm actually very happy with it.
Here's a public service announcement for anybody, anytime they find a $2 boxed vehicle with figure, buy it, and now you know.
You can't pass it up $2. Even like I said, I picked it up, put it down twice, and I ended up coming home with it. So.
All right, that's all I got. Any parting shots you guys want to lay out there?
Well, I'm definitely going to try to get a better mic for next time so we don't have the same problems again. I really do regret I didn't take as big a part in the show as I did last time. But, you know, I did hear the interview you guys did. It was very good. As always, it's great to hear from Keenan. He's got such a great insight on the customizing techniques. And he's a great guy. I've actually met him in person a bunch of times. We tend to run into each other at Target because we're fairly local to each other. And as always, like, you guys post great questions.
Yeah, I don't have much to say other than if you don't see me post within the next 24 hours, it's because I did actually stab myself in the eye with a paintbrush. So, but aside from that, it's a great show, guys.
Yeah, keep your paintbrushes up and your X-Acto blades out of your eye. It's always safe tip.
And pick up every $2 Retaliation hiss you find.
Yeah, exactly.
Have a good one.
You too, guys. Till next time.
Bye.
Once again, the world is a safe place to be, thanks to the G.I. Joe team of experts. G.I. Joe, a real American hero.
Bottom side.
I've been in that water. Dead.
I believe I knew your mother, son.
You know my mom?
Would your name happen to be Johnny?
Yeah.
What's it been, 13 years?
What?
14, my lord. It's like I'm looking in a mirror. Does your mother still hang out at Dockside Bars?
Dockside Bar?
Johnny, do you play baseball?
G.I. Joe!
Pork chop sandwiches!